Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday, February 17th, 2018. You are listening live to the PW Torch live cast, aka the Deep Dive with Rich Fan. I'm, of course, Rich Fan. This week, I'm going to be joined by C.R. Reed and talking about the state of women's wrestling as it pertains to the Hall of Fame votes and the induction of Ivory into the WWE Hall of Fame, some of the news notes of the week, and, of course, the pancake elephant in the room. I look forward to chatting with you all, and if you want to join me on this journey, feel free to dial in at area code 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. So, next few weeks, I'm going to be joined by some awesome ladies involved in the world of wrestling, fans of wrestling, and we're not just going to talk about women's wrestling because, as I mentioned on Twitter earlier today, I'm not big on the tokenism idea. I'm here for representation. I'm here for giving people a voice, but I want them to have a voice in all of wrestling and the areas they're interested in, not just what their sex, gender, race, etc. might lend it to be naturally asked about. And so with that in mind, while I wait for my illustrious co-host to show up today, I want to respond to some of the commentary that's been made, not necessarily about Bruce Mitchell's article, which I'll definitely put out by the end of the show, but I do want to talk about in particular. There was a number of comments both on Twitter, email, and online in some form or fashion requested myself or Travis Bryant to have appeared with Wade Keller when they did the podcast, One Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, talking about the New Day, Bruce's response to the New Day, and his feelings on some of the people making decisions in the WWE. I just want to say right off the bat, I don't want to be the voice of every black wrestling fan. I want to be my voice, and I want people who are of color, people who not are of color, you know, that doesn't make sense English-wise, but bear with me. I want everyone to enjoy me and the stuff I bring to the table. I also want representation at every level. I think having me on with Wade as the black dude on the street would have been a little disingenuous. I think Bruce Mitchell, with 30 years worth of his VIP commentary and his view on things, has been nothing but clear, and his views are his own, just like my views are my own. I think, you know, we have a number of colored, as they say in the Vince McMahon world, we got, you know, too many colored people and doing this and too many gimmicks and all that stuff's stupid. I really want this to be a forum where everyone can just be themselves out in the open, get how you feel about a situation out, and we can talk about it. Having me or Travis there to either rebut or agree with Bruce or Wade would have been an exercise in WWE thinking. I think in the last 2.5 years doing the East Coast cast, in the last several months doing the deep dive, you all know my voice. You know where I stand on some things. I might not agree with everything you say, but I do think it's important for us to have these voices out there. So as it pertains to Bruce's article, and obviously for VIP readers, I implore you to go read it. And I'm sure Wade has got it out there for people of all subscription types to take a gander. You have to realize where Bruce is coming from. He isn't speaking for black people. And I thought that was clear, but I think some people misunderstood it from what I'm reading on Twitter. Bruce, for the most part, has been himself. So when he, you know, just as a little bit of making the sausage goes, when he was interested in writing this, he wrote to me and we chatted about it. And to be honest, a lot of the stuff with the New Day kind of ties into what Bruce was talking about with Sambo, but more or less from the angle of, if you've ever seen Bamboozled, and if you're not, I implore you to watch it, just because it's a good insight as to what happens when a college education is seen as the only way you can be an intelligent black man, and the hoops one jumps through in order to be thrown in the lens of the majority slash white viewer. So it's actually scarily similar to the New Day in that you have a college educated man that essentially puts on a minstrel show in order to get ratings on television. And the question starts to be asked of, how far is too far? What do you need to have to say to get yourself known. Where's your voice? Kind of like if you've ever seen, again, Get Out, The Sunken Place. A lot of that is in there, and it's a really powerful thing. And I definitely encourage everyone to kind of take a listen to that or take a watch of that. It's you know, by this point, it's probably on demand somewhere on Netflix. But I really, as a kid, I didn't get it as much. But now as an adult, I definitely see it. And Bruce mentioning growing up where he did, having a Confederate general in his family line, never hearing the N-word, but knowing the issues of the race and then the South and then the North. It isn't a South and North thing either, too. I apologize that this isn't a clearer thing, but this is something that's really affected me this week, and I wanted to speak out about it on Twitter, but that's a horrible place to do it, so I want to do it here. I think you guys need to realize that Bruce is a very special person, and he is trying to show a lot of people that when you have Vince McMahon, you have Road Dogg, and you have Michael Hayes, three gentlemen growing up in the South who are about his age, and they might be aware of something we aren't. I know Darrell, for instance, and I see him here, and I can't wait to talk to him about this. His mom mentioned, I know he mentioned this on Twitter, that she used it as an empowerment tool. And I think when you're in majority black schools, like I grew up in a majority black school when I was in New York City. So we sang the Black National Anthem. We had protections against it. But for those of us who haven't been in that, and you've been in majority white schools, primarily white institutions like I went to when I went to college, there are going to be a number of people who see that and they don't use it in the positive light that you might turn it into. And I think just having that conversation and saying, hey, sometimes people are going to be scumbags about this and we have to be ready. I think that's something that we need to think about and something we all need to be cognizant of. So as we go through, I hope today's conversation is a good one. Obviously, I want to talk about Ivory. My friend Chris made a point to, you know, I am a biased person. I loved Ivory, both as a prepubescent male that, like, she was my first major wrestling crush. It wasn't Miss Elizabeth so much as Ivory because I thought she was awesome. But also as a wrestler, I thought anyone who survived going through the glow era of women's wrestling – took time off, came back, had to deal with being Godfather's hoe, and then became one of the key wrestlers like Molly Holly in that division at the time where you knew you could get a good match out of them and you didn't have to worry about them injuring people. And she wasn't afraid to stand up to some of the bullies in the WWE at the time and speak out the power. Mind you, Lisa Moretti is a woman that's gone into shoot interviews talking about how much of a bully Layfield was, how much of a jerk Triple H can be, and she's still going in the Hall of Fame. Now, there are going to be some questions asked about the whys. Are they trying to dogpile? Is it something that's easier to do when you see Glow's been successful as opposed to just jumping in and trying to be trailblazers? And I'll welcome your conversations on these things. And again, like I said, area code 515-605-9345 is the number. 515-605-9345 is the number. And I look forward to taking your calls, chatting with you guys, making sure you hit one on the touchstone. And I'll be sure to get to you as soon as I can. But I hope that little bit manifesto, if you will, in the last 5 minutes kind of clears it up. I welcome anyone to tweet me at @Rich_Fan, F-A-N-N. I welcome anytime I'm on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, the Wade Keller post-show specials, any of the roundtables. Shoot an email, pwtdive@gmail.com. I'll be happy to address it. In fact, in the coming months, I had a gentleman from the United Kingdom send an email about the importance of noticing two races when there are biracial wrestlers or multiracial wrestlers. And I'm going to do that. In March, we're going to talk about that. In April, we're going to talk about that. And obviously, we're going to be talking to you guys today. So I'm going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'm going to hopefully have CR on the line. And we are going to dive deep into all subjects.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
All right, welcome to the Deep Dive with Rich Fan. I am, of course, Rich Fan. Now is the time to hit that one on the touchstone dial if you're ready to chat. If not, so long for the ride. Have a listen, and hopefully you can join the discourse by email, pwtdive@gmail.com. Hit me up at Twitter, on Twitter at r. This was my old name. I'm sorry. This is rough. At @rich_fan. We're going to get there. It's one of those days. Valentine's Day dinner approaches after the show, so I apologize in advance if I'm a little out of it. But we're going to start with 862, one of my main men, Kylan. Welcome to the deep dive.
Thank you, Rich. It's an honor to be back on the show. First off, sorry that you did not hear from me all week. As it turns out, my laptop decided to go to heaven this week, so I had to make other arrangements with family temporarily, but we made it to this show, so thank goodness for that. But let me start out by saying I thought Bruce's article was, after reading it right before going on the air today, was one of his best pieces of work, right up there with the Meat Puppets column. For those of you who have not read those, I highly suggest that you do. They are cornerstone must-reads for any wrestling fan.
Oh, thank you for that, and thank you for the tip, Kylan. So what are your thoughts on our subject of the week, namely Ivory, her Hall of Fame candidacy, and some of the pushback she, in my opinion, unfairly received in the wrestling community?
Quite frankly, I feel bad for those individuals that are disseminating the pushback on Ivory going into the Hall of Fame, because that speaks to issues within those individuals that they need to work out on their own, if you know what I mean. Speaking of Ivory, though, and you can broach this with Sierra as well if you like, but my first question for this week is Ivory, or real name Lisa Moretti, going into the Hall of Fame in part because Vince McMahon and Triple H really do admire people who stand up to their very strange practices as far as how people are treated within WWE, as we've grown accustomed to hearing over the last 15 years on various WWE documentaries and or network specials.
Now, you remember the table for three with her. What were your thoughts when she was having those pretty frank conversations with, I think it was Molly and was it Medusa? I can't remember who the third was.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought she was great. I mean, I always thought Ivory was someone that had no filter, and I love that. I mean, like I said before, I thought she was the bee's knees before, but then when I saw that she was just so brutally honest, I mean, she had to deal with a lot in her time, so having the gall to kind of like take that head on, I always thought it was awesome, and I always appreciated her stories, because rarely did we hear from women on the road how life on the road was. And I remember a story she told of a boyfriend she had who was basically crying in her apartment when he had to leave. She's like, look, man, I don't have time for this. I need you to be here when I'm here, but when I'm not here, you got to be an adult. And that was just, usually we're so used to women being, you know, painted as these demure things who are just, oh, my boyfriend, you know, I'm going to be crying because I'll miss you every day. And she was like, nah, man, I got a job. I got stuff to do. And I always just thought that was awesome.
I believe now that you say that, she kind of even alluded to looks, since I'm not here a lot of the time. If you want to, you can kind of move on, but when I'm around, I'll be here for you, but don't cry when I'm not here.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. And I thought she was just awesome. Let's see. Bear with me one second. Nope. I'm trying to see Ciara at the same time while we're going through. And for some reason, I'm not seeing her. So I don't know what's up with our host is being a jerk. And unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to see her. Nope. Don't see you.
So you'll know, I was going to ask the same questions of her that we discussed 2 weeks ago. Which were, now that WWE is treating foreign talent a lot better, or not a lot better, that was probably a bad choice of words, but now that WWE is treating foreign talent somewhat better, will we ever see Manami Toyota in the Hall of Fame? And the third question was, do you think Ronda Rousey will fall in the Trish Stratus leader Manami Toyota level of rest of WWE or women's wrestler, or will she fall in the Jenna Maraska terrible women's wrestler category?
Okay, so Manami Toyota, we're going to see Ronda fall at the end of the day. Now, personally, before Ciara comes on, I'm going to say for me, I think Ronda's going to be better than the quote-unquote terrible women's wrestlers, if anything, because of her wrestling base. The area she's going to have to work on is keeping the UFC Ronda and not tourist, I'm happy to be here Ronda, separate. Because if she's tourist, just happy to be here Ronda, I think we're going to run into an issue where a lot of fans see it as disingenuous, and they're already looking for a reason to boo her. So giving them a reason is only going to blow up in their face. As it pertains to Manami Toyota, we've already discussed it. So as soon as Ciara hops on, I'll definitely throw you in the pool with her on that one. But I think she's going to be fine. I think it's going to be something where they will do it, but it has to be, again, the time is going to be right for them to do it before they hop in. Kylan, thank you very much, sir, for your call as always. And I look forward to our chat at the end of March when we lay down some knowledge on our next topic together.
I'm looking forward to that, too. So you'll know that topic is going to be something we don't specifically ever talk about. That topic, so you can get ready now, will be Best Individual Announcer Soundbite.
Ooh. Yeah, that's pretty good. Best Announcer Soundbites. I have it in there. March 31st, I'm ready, you're ready, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend, Kylan.
I certainly will. You do the same.
All right, everybody. That was Kylan from New Jersey, a frequent caller of the Deep Dive, and I always look forward to his chats. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, hopefully my hosting computer will stop having issues and I'll be able to get my co-host on. And so sit tight, and we'll be right with you here on the Deep Dive.
No matter what kind of wrestling fan you are, Ring Rust Radio is the perfect podcast for you. Every Wednesday night, Ring Rust Radio breaks down the hottest news in professional wrestling, including Raw, SmackDown, and WWE pay-per-view reviews. That isn't all, as Ring Rust Radio also delves into NXT, Lucha Underground, Ring of Honor, Impact Wrestling, and New Japan to discuss the latest happenings in every major company. Ring Rust Radio conducts interviews with the biggest stars in the wrestling business as well, including Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Roman Reigns, AJ Styles, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, and many more. If you're looking for your wrestling fix with an entertaining twist, check out Ring Rust Radio every week on Blog Talk Radio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive with Rich Fan. I am, of course, Rich Fan. C.R. Reed is currently trying to join us now, but my switchboard seems to be a jerk, so we're efforting to get her on so we can have our chat. In the interim, I'm talking with you guys, giving my opinions, and we're talking about whatever you want to talk about. But our big topic of the week is the induction of Ivory, and kind of a double dive, really. The induction of Ivory and then kind of reaction to the New Day and the Bruce Mitchell, Pancakes, Little Black Sambo article, and your thoughts, my thoughts, and kind of working through that. So we're going to keep on moving, and I'm going to go to our next caller, 814. State your name, where you're calling from, and thanks for calling the Deep Dive.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Hi, Ryan. Welcome back.
First question I have for you is, if Ivory was on the Wrestling Observer ballot, what percentage of the vote do you think she would get, and who do you think would be most likely to vote for her? Would it be the former wrestlers or more likely the reporters that would vote for her?
Did you say Rhonda, or did I mishear? Or Ivory?
I said Ivory.
I'm so sorry. I didn't hear you, Ryan. Yeah, so Ivory, I think for the Meltzer Observer, for the Dave Meltzer Observer Hall of Fame, I think the biggest pushback would probably be writers, to be quite frank. I think the wrestlers would give her the votes, but in terms of the writers, I think more people might be in Bix's wheelhouse than I would be comfortable admitting. So I would say writers. What do you think?
Probably so, because I don't think Dave was probably much of a Glow fan, and he's not really into the characters either, which is pretty much what Ivory was. It was like the Right to Censor and some other gimmick she did in WWE.
Yeah. And I get that, too. I get that he's going to have more of a work rate-based criterion, and that's fair, but he's been doing it and he's consistent. The one thing that baffled me when Bix brought up the fact that her work rate was subpar was that it's the WWE Hall of Fame. We've got the Godfather in there. We've got, you know, a celebrity wing. We've got so many different Tatsumi Fujinami. If you can show me the matches of import for the WWE he had, you know, on one hand, I'd be amazed, you know. So when it's such an arbitrary and capricious thing where Vince McMahon's just picking what he wants, that's where I get a little weirded out when we're making judgment calls as to who gets in or not. So what do you think?
Well, yeah, like you said, it probably would be the writers, but I wasn't sure, because you probably have a lot of friends that are writers, so you would know if they'd be more likely to vote for Ivory.
Yeah, and you know, even – oh, yeah, I think knowing the people I know, I think she wouldn't get in just off of that. But like I said, with the WWE, it's so capricious and arbitrary. There shouldn't be this line of demarcation where people are screaming in the streets for Ivory. And speaking of Ivory, I would like to welcome my guest this week, Ms. Ciara Reed. Ciara, welcome to the Deep Dive. Thank you for your time. And how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you guys for having me on. Can you guys hear me fine?
Yes.
Great.
So right now we're on the phone with Ryan from Cumberland, and he just had a question of, if this was the Dave Meltzer Hall of Fame, do you think the wrestlers, the writers, or an other entity would prevent Ivory from being into his Hall of Fame as opposed to WWE's?
I wanted to say all of them because, you know, I understand people have their own grievances about, you know, who deserves a Hall of Fame ballot or who deserves this or that, but you know, she still deserves her flowers to be given to her at any point in her career, regardless if she's still wrestling or not. And, you know, all this week, all I've been seeing more so is writers taking away her accomplishments from her, saying like, well, I mean, she did this and that, but like, she was not a great wrestler. But at the same time, it's like, how many people go into a Hall of Fame every year and didn't even do hardly diddly squat? And we're still told, well, they kind of deserve it because they kind of did this one thing. Why can't she get that same explanation for her? Why does it have to always have to be, well, she didn't really do anything, especially when it comes to women. I notice that every year when a woman is getting an award for anything in wrestling, there's got to be these think pieces about why she shouldn't get that. But when it's a guy, like, that does nothing, it's, you know, it makes me think about a few years ago when they put Coco Beware in Hall of Fame. And everybody was like, you know, he wasn't that great of a wrestler. Why does he deserve this? And then a week later, everybody changed it and was like, well, you know, he kind of deserves this. Why can't we just let the women get in the Hall of Fame and get their just due for being women in this industry? Why does it have to always be this devil's advocate or this debate about it?
That's a good question. I mean, last year I was there for Beth Phoenix's induction. And I always thought, again, this is the whole reason Wade gave me this show. I always go way too much into the information of backgrounds of people. And so for me, I thought Beth Phoenix was awesome when she was a wrestler because I knew in Western New York, my friends that lived there, she was one of the first women to wrestle boys in the amateur level in high school. And she got the Glamazon name for being an awesome wrestler, not because someone looked at her and said, we're going to put you in this package. And so that's really cool to me. I find it interesting, and I'd love your opinion on this, that most of the women that are inducted have these historical relevancies that the WWE never took advantage of in their careers, but afterward are jumping on them. And if people were more cognizant of that, I think I would hope. I you know, at this point in the world, nothing surprised me. I would hope more people would be seeking these things out. Like with Ivory, I mentioned before you got on, as a teenage boy, Ivory was like the coolest, not because she was the quote unquote sexiest or anything like that. I liked her because she could wrestle and she had a level of confidence that very few of the women that she wrestled with had. And some of it was because they were not trained. She was trained. Right. She had to go through GLOW. How many people could say that they had to go through like a thing, a step removed from apartment wrestling, and then jump into the prepubescent stage of the women's wrestling movement? And then when you look at her on the indies, she wrestled Mercedes. She wrestled, I can't remember Bailey's name when she was in. She wrestled these. She wrestled Rebecca Knox.
Right.
So this woman earned it. And so, yeah, I agreed. I stayed out because I'm never – I try not to throw too much smoke on Twitter when I can avoid it. But when I saw Bix put that out about, you know, wait, can't wait for people to justify her work, I was like, come on, man. Mm-hmm. We got the Godfather in the Hall of Fame.
Right. I mean, and there's a lot of people, if we really wanted to pick apart this Hall of Fame and say, you know, are we serious about making this person a contender? But at the same time, the WWE's Hall of Fame is pretty much a joke in itself, you know, because some of the people they've inducted comedians and just random people that showed up on the show one time just to say they have that person there for namesake and just, I guess, legitimize their Hall of Fame as an entertainment piece as opposed to a pro wrestling piece. You know, there's a pro wrestling Hall of Fame, which is more so geared towards inducting the athlete competing in the sport. Those are two different things. Now, the problem, like I said, I'm having is just that people cannot just decipher that this person should be able to get that. Like you said, the Godfather got it. Like, first of all, we're inducting somebody that betrayed the culture of being a pimp having hoes. Meanwhile, at the same time in our company, we're trying to build up a women's division and make it be seen as a serious thing while also having bomb panties matches. So we got hoes Bomb Panties matches, Mutt Wrestling World matches, oh, women's title match, and then we're having the company, you know, the owner of the company's daughter being seen as the biggest bitch in the world on television. We got so many things going on around this. But because one of those women out of that era is getting inducted into Hall of Fame, it's a problem. Ivory should have been in that Hall of Fame years ago. And I don't care who thinks I'm being biased about this because I love her, but at the same time, you know, like you said, coming from GLOW, which was not seriously taken, you know, as a wrestling product. Everybody just looked at it as a cheesy cam show as we see on Netflix, you know, with series. Around that time when she got into GLOW, there was, you know, other promotions and stuff set up like that, like LPWA and stuff like that. And a lot of the women that were looking for these places were just kind of lured in, just like we see on the series, you know, acting. And they were lured in to act these parts out and do a little bit of wrestling news, but not seriously, you know, go into the business for themselves. Some of those women came out of those places and actually jumped into the business. Ivory is one of them. There's plenty others. But at the same time, you had other women in the business that were wrestling for, like, AWA, like, for instance, Medusa. And, you know, conversations I've had with her, you know, she's told me there was times people didn't take those women seriously because they felt like, you know, they were making fun of what they were actually doing. You know, they're driving the shows and then being told they're not going to be included on the card. And, you know, Sherry Martel is being told the same thing. And, you know, they're just driving town to town. And then you've got these chicks on television kind of making a mockery of what you're doing, really. So for somebody to come from that to say, I'm going to really go for this full time and actually make a career of it 20 years later and now getting her just due for doing that, that should be talked about more than, oh, she didn't do much. Smallest thing in her story. She has a huge story that everybody kind of skips past.
Yeah, I agree completely. And before we go too far, I do want to set the stage and introduce you. Why don't you tell the folks what you do? I can say before you start, I first heard of Ciara when I was talking with Mike Sempervivi. He had had her recently on The Observer Live. And thanks, Ryan from Cumberland, for making that connection now, being a guest on both shows regularly. And, you know, when I was starting this show, who were good names for people who know Japanese wrestling, knows women's wrestling, he was the first person you mentioned. So I am more than pleased to have you on here. And so with me blowing you up like that, why don't you just let everyone know how they can find you, what you cover, and how you got into what made you a fan?
Well, first off, I cover women's wrestling over at Wrestling Ponderings. I've been writing about women's wrestling for about 7-8 years. I can't even keep track because every year it seems like I didn't start this year, but then I remember I did start a certain year. But I cover everything to do with women's wrestling, not just WWE, not what's going on with Impact Wrestling. I mean everything. Everything that's going on here in North America. If it's wrestling South America, I will find it and get the results for Australia, Europe, you know, everywhere. Japan, especially, you know, with the Joshi. That takes up a lot of my article. I post every couple of weeks. But that's basically what I do. And what got me into it was turning on television and seeing that there was women in wrestling. I remember watching it when I was younger and seeing more so the men. I didn't know that women got into wrestling. And when I first got back into it, the first people I seen on my screen was Sable and Jacqueline. And this was around when they were for the women's championship. So I've been watching since that long. That's why I don't understand why people were acting crazy about this Ivory thing. Because I'm like, she was a big part of that story of keeping that belt going.
Yeah, it's amazing to me. And like I said, I don't know when we're going to get that line of when people just accept women and their skill in the ring, outside of the ring, their role in history, and how that can just be a thing. It doesn't have to be a special thing. But, you know, as I mentioned, I was talking to a friend before the show started. When we think about the women's revolution, evolution, whatever Stephanie wants to label it, we don't include AJ Lee anymore because it's not politically feasible for them to do so. Stephanie's kind of stepped in that role, even though she was the one screaming on Twitter at the top of her lungs, give divas a chance. we don't include the fact that women like Ivory and Molly Holly and Luna Vachon, if you want to talk about a legacy wrestler who should have been given more than having to wear, you know, being in bra and panties matches and bikini matches against her will and just being put in a position where King could ogle her and make fun of her for not being as happy as some of the other women were in those roles. You have to look at the totality of these women or you're not doing it right. You're doing it all wrong. And I really, speaking of that, I wanted to get your opinion on the stuff at the New Day because of the same reason. A lot of people this week in wrestling Twitter were losing their minds over Ivory, and then they were jumping down my colleague Bruce's throat because as a 50-plus-year-old white man, he, growing up in the South, mentioned that he was uncomfortable with the imagery that evoked memories of him as a kid of Little Black Sambo with regards to the New Day and the pancake eating and the fact that Road Dogg and Vince McMahon and Michael Hayes all grew up in the same region and have those sort of touchstones as they're writing things and how people misinterpret that as him trying to be like trying to cape for black people or trying to speak for black people. I just see a lot of stuff in wrestling. Like, I'm not a woman, but if I see something's going on that sucks, I shouldn't be stopped from saying it sucks because I'm a man. I hope that's correct, but I want you to take the floor and kind of give your thoughts on the last week of wrestling. You already talked about Ivory a little bit, but what about this New Day thing? Do you see some of the imagery? Do you think it's right, wrong, and different? I had mentioned when we were trying to get you connected, it really draws parallels to me of the movie Bamboozled by Spike Lee, because you have these college-educated black men who are kind of put in a position where they think they're outsmarting their bosses by making it less offensive, but the guys in the back don't necessarily care how less offensive it is. It's the humor they want to see.
I can agree with that. I know a lot of people don't agree with that or think there's nothing wrong with the segment or anything that New Day is doing. About maybe 2 years ago, there was discussion happening in my mentions on Twitter about the New Day and if this was false shielding or, you know, making a mockery out of black people and the fact that they were just dancing and cracking jokes and stuff like that. And if this was actually perpetuating a stereotype and stuff like that. And at that time, I said to them, I can't really say that it is because around that time, everything they were pretty much doing was, it felt more like they were involved in with the process of it than someone telling them, you know, you go out there and do this and that. And, you know, over the past couple of years watching it, there's some times where I'll be like, okay, this seems like something they came up with in the back. But then there's other instances where I'd be like, who wrote this? Who suggested this? Who, you know, or if they came up with it, why would you want to, you know, put that out there? Being a black woman and watching wrestling, I tell people this all the time. If I did not have Jacqueline and later Jazz, I probably wouldn't even think black women in wrestling were a thing. And if you go and look at the history of black women in wrestling, it hasn't been great, especially during, you know, the civil rights movement and, you know, their segregation and, you know, the South still having problems with blacks being in the same place as whites. And it was also up north, you know, a lot of places was like this, out west coast and everything. So if you look and see all that stuff and read the stories, you'll see that there is still a problem there. And to this day, I feel like there is still a problem there when it comes to black athletes and professional athletes, because there's always this line of where writers, especially in big companies like WWE or Impact Wrestling, they'll introduce a black athlete as being themselves and being, you know, the greatest athlete known to man and everything. And then there becomes this point where they're just like, you know what, let's throw a stereotype on them or make them be a black wrestler of a black descent and all this stuff just to point out that they're black when we can clearly see that. You don't have to tell me that. And you know, Kofi Kingston, he's been a victim of this. You know, he was brought in as a Jamaican, speaking in patois and everything. And then it takes one moment for, you know, an in-ring segment and Triple H mention, where'd your accent go? For him to come out of that character and then be called the Wildcat Kofi Kingston. And then all of a sudden we started getting pulled about that, you know, he's from Ghana and African heritage and stuff on commentary. And it was just like, okay, that's great, but why are you guys mentioning this first time instead of making him a stereotypical Jamaican, you know, and having the SOS theme and everything like that? And then now you have New Day, and I know one thing with New Day that got on my nerves this week was their ring attire and people coming at them for, you know, incorporating just, you know, the African textures into their ring attire and just being like, you know, why you guys have to put out there that you're black or you're African? And it's just like, well, what's wrong with being proud of your heritage? You know, Biggie and Kobe Kingston are both, you know, descendants of Athens. And I'm not sure what Xavier Woods' background is, but you never know, he might come from, like, Ghana, just like that or two. But at the same time, you have that, and then you have them go out there and do those segments like that with the pancakes and stuff like that. It just makes you like, are you trying to tell me you're proud of your heritage, or you're proud of your heritage and creative thinks they can take your heritage and everything and make fun of it? And when it comes to Michael Hayes, we've read stories about him being pretty much blatant out there with the N-word.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not shocked. You know, he grew up in an era where, you know, there's a lot of white people that think there's still nothing wrong with saying that word or saying things, you know, that they shouldn't be saying to black people and thinking it's still appropriate when it's not. And Road Dogg is another one that comes from that era. And it's like, you would think their mind process over the years would realize that maybe you shouldn't do this for young men. Let them be professional wrestlers. Instead of being this gimmick that we have to keep making fun of them in some type of way. It's the weirdest thing to sit there and watch and wonder, am I supposed to like this as a black person or am I supposed to be offended?
Yeah, it's funny because you were talking about this and I'm thinking back earlier, what was it, 2 weeks ago, Undertaker, and I want to say, who was it? It was the gentleman who runs, I wish I could remember his name right now, but my brain is always is failing me at the inopportune time. One of the gentlemen who used to work at TMZ, he reports now for pro wrestling. What's his name?
I'm not sure.
Oh, darn it. He does pro wrestling sheet. I can't remember.
Oh, Ryan Satin. Anyway,
thank you. Thank you. Oh, my gosh. Thank you, CR. Yeah, Ryan Satin had put up the fact that Undertaker had taken a picture with his wife taking the photo of him and his one of his children wearing a We Stand for the Flag, We Stand for the Anthem, whatever, shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And he put it up there. And then Road Dogg responded instantly to Satin, kind of like outing this picture, saying, you know, he's just proud of his country. Is your politics blinding you to the fact that that's an option too? And it's like, well, why are you jumping in his mentions about a photo that isn't a you? And how do you see kneeling for the national anthem as a political action, but standing isn't? Like, so that was already the red flag in the back of my head. So then when this happened and Bruce wrote the article, I was like, all right, stop telling on yourselves, guys. Like, it was already, like you said, with Michael Hayes, that case has been closed for a while. With Vincent Kennedy, well, whatever his middle name is, I think it is Kennedy. But with Vince McMahon, he said year after year, Martin Luther King is my role model, but in no way have I seen action that denotes those words.
Right.
And if we're being real about it, like I talked a few weeks ago about the idea of wrestling being problematic with the Michael Elgin stuff, because no one wants to talk about the fact that when you're a scumbag, you should be called out for that. It is gone are the days of, well, it's just boys being boys. You can't. It's 2018. We need to bring wrestling into 2018, and it starts with these guys too. You can't just hide behind the WWE would never do this, and then you look at Saba Simba. You look at Kamala. You look at Akeem the African Dream. You look at Slick. You look at Sapphire. The list goes on and on of examples. You look at Shinsuke Nakamura before they let him talk, when they would put the mouthpiece in his mouth. You look at Asuka, who is a phenomenal wrestler, but they need to portray her as this, you know, childlike creature, because they don't want to just either give her subtitles or let her be as aggressive as she is with her Japanese conversations in English. It's just baffling to me that people were so willing to cape for WWE in these regards, maybe because their lens doesn't see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
and I've talked for way too long, so I'm going to bring in one of our callers because we do have some folks on hold. So 773, state your name, where you're calling from. Thanks for joining the Deep Dive with Ms. Reed and myself.
Boris from Chicago.
Boris, my man. Now, remember, before you start, no Black Panther spoilers. I got people listening. I don't need to get no complaints.
No. No, I was just going to say this is a really good topic because we're on the heels of a really good movie, and it was in this. They tried to take it out the narrative of this is this comic book. You know, they tried to bring it in the real world, as in, you know, the negativity that came out before the movie was released, and just to see those powerful culture Black women, and to see people. We're just sitting there, walking into the theater and people dressed up, and it just felt so different. You know, to all the movies that I've been to through under the cinematic universe, this one, it stood out by itself, and it just felt so, it just felt so empowering to see something that reflected what you're looking for. And that's in comic books, in wrestling, in any aspects of entertainment. You know what I'm saying? I found that watching this movie, it made me feel good, you know, for the first time, because wrestling is not reflecting my me. You know, I don't see a strong Black wrestler, period, or a strong Black woman wrestler. And if she is, she's still not treated as she should. You know what I'm saying? And that's my first thing. I want to ask her if she has seen the movie or is she going to see it. And, you know, because we tie in wrestling and the Marvel Cinematic Universe a lot when we talk and, you know, off and online. You know what I'm saying? So I was just wondering my first question to her is, you know, has she been keeping up with this particular movie or, you know, the aspects of between wrestling and, you know, the cinematic entertainment, WWE Theater Entertainment?
I haven't seen a movie. I'm planning on seeing it. And when it comes to wrestling and the difference there, like you pointed out, with the Black Panther movie, for me, they didn't have to necessarily tell me that they had an all-Black cast for this movie. Just knowing that they're going to have a superhero movie and it's all-Black, that's telling me that this is different. This is something I should celebrate and not be forced to celebrate. And when it comes to wrestling, they have to always point out that you have, you know, a one Black world champion and not multiple. They have to point that out. Or, you know, Alicia Fox was the first African-American Divas champion. Okay, do we have to point that out? Why can't she be one of the many? And I see that as being a big deal. And so that, and then, you know, like with Jacqueline, you know, Jacqueline was the first woman ranked in the PWI 500. And I know that is kind of, you know, a big deal, and sometimes the numbers are just thrown together and whatever, but she was the first woman to do that before anybody else got to be on that list. And, you know, over the years, she got, you know, pushed to the wayside, and you didn't hear no mention of Jacqueline and the things she did throughout her career. And she did a lot of remarkable things, but at the same time, she endured the same treatment as other Black women in this industry. And, you know, she worked with a lot of the biggest stars, but she still didn't receive the same attention as a Trish Stratus or a Lita or anybody else. And it makes me question, is that's just the typical role that they do in professional wrestling when it comes to Black athletes? Like, we have so many great Black professional wrestlers. You know, we got Shelton Benjamin, who's like one of my favorites of all time. And, you know, you got guys out there like Bobby Lashley, you have The Rock. And, you know, The Rock is their go-to Black wrestler. But for me, it's always like, well, what about Booker T or anybody else? You know, you got Bad News Allen and all that stuff like that. So you have a plethora of Black athletes, but how many get pointed out as being a prime example of what they deem as a good Black wrestler? Not many. Yeah. It's the same thing with the women. And with the women, it's worse with the women because it's like if Alicia Fox wasn't there present on that roster, would they even point her out? It's, you know, when I cover indie wrestling now, I hate saying this, but, you know, every week I come across my new in wrestling, and then I'm so shocked to see that there's so many women involved in indies right now as opposed to four. So I'm like, every time I'm just like, wow, like, it, you know, wrestling is becoming not only popular with everyone, but there's a lot of black people get involved in this. And it's a beautiful thing to see that, you know, we're all involved in all forms of sports, regardless if it's, you know, rehearsed or not. But when I watch the television screen, I don't see that same type of respect reflected as I do on the indies where they're not marketing, you know, this guy as the cool black wrestler. He's just a wrestler along with everybody else, and he has a lot of freaking accolades, like Shane Strickland and all these other guys. It's not the token black guy on the card. He's one of the many on the card. When you watch WWE, we're either stereotyped or we're thrown out there just to do whatever, like Apollo Crews. It doesn't add up.
It's crazy because I'm thinking of in Orlando last year, I went for WrestleMania weekend and I made a goal of seeing every indie show, and then everything else I was kind of like, meh on. So I watched WrestleMania with some friends at a bar as opposed to going, actually being there. So we went to all the WWN shows, and I was just talking to my buddy about it this afternoon. I saw Shane Strickland for the first time in a tag match with Sami Callihan versus the South Pacific Power Trip. And that was one of the best matches I'd ever seen live. And Shane Strickland, I was instantly a fan. And on that same card, I had Keith Lee versus Ricochet. I had Leo Rush. I had, you know, like you said, there were so many wrestlers of color. Mm-hmm. It was just overwhelming. And in hindsight, I'm like, yeah, this guy wasn't the black guy. He was the good wrestler. He was the other good wrestler. This guy is Keith Lee. There isn't this, you know, I always go back to the story that people mention in interviews where, you know, someone said something to Michael Hayes about a black wrestler having a certain gimmick, and he was like, that's too many gimmicks, because to him, being black alone is a gimmick.
Right. And we're going to come to a point in time in professional wrestling where at this point in 2018, you shouldn't be using anybody's ethnicity, their heritage, or anything they celebrate personally as a gimmick. If you're still doing that in 2018, then I question you as a person alone, because it shouldn't be about that. If I can sit there and turn on SmackDown and see three black men in the ring and know that two are from Africa, especially because Keith and his family came from Ghana over here, I shouldn't have to be told every week that, hey, there's three black guys here. Two are from Africa. One, we're not sure where you came from. But their gimmick is this. They're black people. I shouldn't be told that. I should turn on SmackDown. And if they want to come out there and do their dancing and, you know, cracking jokes and whatever, let them. But don't let everything they do be about them as a person or their culture. It's annoying, and I shouldn't have to keep seeing this nowadays. And, it makes me think about, you know, Sasha Banks. She gets a lot of backlash online, and I remember before she got brought up to the main roster, fans were calling her Ratchet.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, why is she being called Ratchet? And some fans even say, well, she's the Ratchet black girl. She does all the ghetto, this and that. And I'm just like, what about her makes you say that she's ghetto? That she's black or biracial? Is that what gives it away that you're ghetto, you're Ratchet already? And no one can give me a definite answer of how she is Ratchet. Well, out here, that's things like that. Like, if you do something that's different from them, they categorize it as ghetto, as black, as you shouldn't do this or that. But then you also have the other side of people where they celebrate that as a culture and think that that's cool, or every black person acts like that. And it's like, that's not true. What you see on TV is not necessarily true all the time. So you have that, and it's the same thing with Naomi. Naomi gets attacked for no reason. Just being a black woman that is amazing in the ring, fully confident in herself, doesn't care what anybody else thinks. She gets attacked for just existing. And it makes me wonder, you know, how was this was the same type of behavior like this or more prevalent when Jacqueline was wrestling in the 80s? When, you know, women like Sweet Georgia Brown and all of them during the 1970s and stuff, was it this bad or was it 10 times worse? Because the same way as it is now, that lets me know that these companies have never thought about their ethics and treatment of people of color, period. You know, you brought up Shinsuke and Asuka. Asuka is the first Japanese woman they've had signed since Bull Nakano. And that's like a 20-something-year gap. And, you know, for me, being a longtime follower of her, especially when she was in wrestling in Japan as Kana, I never really thought that she needed to talk. She didn't really talk much then. So for me, I've always just loved her theatrics and her performance as a person, as opposed to having her do a 20-minute promo like we're always accustomed to in wrestling. So for me, I let that stuff fly. But at the same time, knowing that there's that big gap in between the time that they hired tonight of her background, that lets you know that when it comes to people of color, they'll employ 19 black wrestlers and make them the regular black wrestler on the roster before they go and employ anybody else and try to make a difference, you know, diversity. You have all these tournaments where you got people coming from different countries to compete in these tournaments, but you're still reflecting the same type of treatment on television. That doesn't go hand in hand. That doesn't make any sense. You cannot do that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's, I mean, hit every point. So, before we keep going, one, I want to make sure you're still okay to go a few minutes past 7 because we have like four mm-hmm. other callers on hold.
Sure.
Oh, perfect. So I'm going to go to our break right now. We're going to go to one more break. And when I come back, I got to do a little pause for the cause with regards to Wink and how awesome they are. And I'll actually tell you a little bit about it now. Wink makes it easier to discover great wine. If you had a task of trying to pick out a wine you're going to love, but a catch of it has to be something you hadn't had before, that's where you'd go. Just fill out Wink's palate profile quiz. Answer some simple questions, something your average store clerk wouldn't dare ask or translate into a recommendation. Something like, how do you take your coffee and what do you feel about blueberries? Wink will send you wines curated to your taste. The more wines you rate, the more personalized your monthly selections. Each month, there are new delicious wines like the insanely popular Summer Water Rosé. Discover great wine today. Try wink.com/prowrestlingtorch. You'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's TRYWINC.com/PWTorch for $20 off. Try wink.com/PWTorch. Remember, Wink is just like the motion, but it's with a C instead of a K. So make sure it's Wink, W-I-N-C. And when we come back, CR and I are going to answer your questions. I see I have four people on hold. We're going to chat with y'all. We're going to make it work here on the Deep Dive.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're coming on to the little bit of overtime with CR and Rich. I am, of course, Rich Fan, host of the Deep Dive every week. We have some guys on hold. I'm going to ask, are some people on hold? Don't know the sex or gender of the people on hold, so I shouldn't assume. I have four folks. I'm just going to ask that, in the interest of preserving CR's time and preventing me from being shanked by my wife for running late too far into our Valentine's Day dinner, that y'all keep your conversation short. Boris, I apologize. We won't be able to get back to you tonight, but you know the number. Text me. We'll keep this conversation going. So with that in mind, CR, welcome back, and we're going to take our first call of the next section, and that's going to be 478. 478, state your name, where you're calling from, and thanks for calling the Deep Dive.
Darrell from Georgia, how you doing today, Rich?
How you Darrell, doing, my man?
No problem, no problem. I listened to you earlier, especially talking about Ivory. When I was introduced to Ivory to WWE TV, I didn't know nothing about Glow until the TV show came out on Netflix. So I'm not skewed. Whatever. when I first seen her come up, she was a wrestler to me. She was like one of the wrestlers, like a Jackie or something like that, who just, to me, they were hard-nosed wrestlers and not trying to be sex appeal. And I was sexy stuff from that time. So I have no dispute or reason on why she shouldn't be a Hall of Famer. She defended the title or won the title at WrestleMania. So to me, she should be in the Hall of Fame, no question. That's my point of view on it. But, you know, I understand where who watched them longer. So I understand their points of view. And I just take and listen to whatever they have to say, and then I go off my own decision. So,
mm-hmm.
But speaking on the article and stuff, mm-hmm. I read Bruce's article. I also, before I read that, I heard him on the podcast speak about it and his feelings on it and everything. And my take was, I didn't see nothing wrong with it. I didn't see nothing wrong with his take. And valid points, offended because they have their right to be offended. My whole mm-hmm. thing was, my mama and Bruce are around the same age. My mama a little bit older than Bruce, coming from down south, and it was segregated and everything like that. It was a different tone when you got that book that was listed in school, Lil Black Sambo and stuff like that. So I understand how that could be offensive and stuff like that. But the concept, when I spoke to my mom and I had a previous article, I had her listening to the podcast version where he said it, and then I showed her the skit with New Day, and I mm-hmm. asked her feelings about it. And she told me when they were coming up in school, it was a popular book in black schools. And it was something that they had to read because it was on the curriculum. And segregation didn't happen for a long time until it was still in school while she got segregated into the white school. So what they was told was, don't be mad at the book. Don't hate the book. It's a pretty decent book. But don't let it, you know who you are. You know who yourself mm-hmm. is. Don't allow anybody to tell you who you are. And then, because once you allow them to tell you who you are, that was my whole point about it. I don't know if they was put up to it. We understand that Vince McMahon approves anything that comes on WWE TV. I don't know if he told them to do it or they chose to do it, but he approved it. So mm-hmm. I can't get offended or get upset and be like, Vince made him do it, because now I'm speculating. And if I speculate and don't know if it's true or not, all they do is build up hatred and me being upset at something that I don't know if it's true or not. And I can't get mad if they chose to do it, because you can allow people to make you feel some type of way or be offended at something, because now you're allowing them to control the narrative and control you by making you offended at something that if you choose not to be offended by it, you don't have to be offended by it. You're taking the power back. They have controlled that for so long, for so many years. So that was my whole issue with it. Seeing that from both sides. But today we get, and we don't get offended about everything. Sometimes we can choose what we're offended by. Yes, they do some stuff, but to me, they seem like they're controlling their career. They're choosing to do whatever they want to do, and if they don't want to do something, they don't do it. So that's their choice. Now, it's a different story if they don't control it. They're just doing it just to get along, just to get a paycheck. And the people in the back, like Michael Hayes, Vince McMahon, Kevin Dunn, are making them do it. That's a different story. Then I will be offended. But other than that, I can't be offended by it.
Oh, well, as always, D, I appreciate it. I'm going to have to put you back on hold because it was starting to break up a little bit, so it's going to be tough conversation-wise. But what do you think about that point, CR, the idea of, like, we can control what we're offended by and taking the power back by really repurposing how maybe the people in the back view the skit as opposed to how you want it to be interpreted?
We definitely have the power to control what we're offended by, but at the same time, it doesn't mean that we still can't be offended or something should not be a normal routine. You know, I'm sure the New Day is turning down things that is brought to them by creative in the back, I'm sure, like a lot of wrestlers. But at the same time, I think people get lost and forget that regardless of you turn down everything, there is going to be some point where they agree to do something just to get on television because they, you know, happen to be champions, or they have to promote themselves in order to be included on the next couple of shows, or they're going to be lumped into the back with the rest of the guys that are not brought on these two shows. And at the same time, regardless of what you say yes to and what you say no to, what you're showing us that week, especially like, you know, this week, you don't know who else you could possibly be offending, even if you don't think it's nothing wrong with it, or what you're teaching younger adolescent kids to be okay with this or accept this or not think nothing's wrong with it. Like, you know, everything that Bruce said did not offend me. I felt like, you know, he should be offended. He should have the right to say, this is wrong. I don't like this. Why are they doing this? Everybody has the right to do that. Whole section of everyone that says, I don't see anything wrong with it. How is this perpetuating a stereotype? How is this racist or whatever? It shouldn't have to take one person to say, this is wrong, and they shouldn't have to do this for these three men. And everybody else doesn't think anything wrong with it. Like, think about that audience, especially the younger children. They're going to chalk this up as, this is what happens on wrestling, like I used to when I was younger. You know, think that this is a normal thing. But when you get older and you start being like, why do they do this with all the black wrestlers or wrestlers that happen to be of color? Why do they have to do certain things? Just like someone that's of Indian descent, they have to be ruthless or this type of way or evil or something. Why does it have to be that? It shouldn't have to be. That's very cartoony. And I thought that, you know, those type of cartoony satire-like things had been done decades ago, and we shouldn't be bringing it back to life because it's not entertaining for anybody. If you want to have all this inclusion of all these, you know, ethnicities, you've got to get rid of that stuff, regardless of you think you're not offending anybody or you are.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. Now, I think we're going to bring on, let's see, 623. Thank you for calling in with Ciara and Rich on the Deep Dive. State your name, where you're calling from.
Hey, Rich. Hey, Ciara. This is Brian calling from Phoenix.
Hey, Brian.
Welcome, Brian. Mr. This is a 27-year PW Torch VIP member.
And I will keep this quick because I want you to get up and go to dinner and not have Melissa get too mad at you. First of all, I hope you both have a real good weekend. the things I'll say really quick, briefly, is that with Ivory, I have no problem with her going to the Hall of Fame. She was I have a 6 degrees of separation. Ivory, who originally funded the original GLOW, was one of my old bosses. I mean, you know, I say old bosses, like, you know, 15 people down or up from me, I should say. But he actually funded the original GLOW, and he had it at his hotel, the Riviera, the old Riviera Casino in Las Vegas. He owned that around the same time, so when he originally funded GLOW. Ivory, congratulations. Good luck to you. I read Bruce's column, of course, Rich. And I need to reread it maybe two or three times to get the gist of it. I've never heard I've heard of Sambo's Restaurant, and I've never heard of the story Little Black Sambo, so I was very unfamiliar with it. The one thing, one thing I have a problem with what Bruce said was that, you know, people not knowing their history, and I'm not a huge history buff, so the first I've heard of that part was, you know, when Bruce talked about it. The other thing I'm going to mention is that the first Hall of Famer in the WWE, and we know. The three of us will need to talk about the WWE Hall of Fame and what the criteria is, because that's another thing that's been going back and forth about how the Observer is the real Hall of Fame, and, you know, the WWE is like a praise to Vince for having me into it, and it's him having some kind of agenda behind it. That's for a whole other conversation. The first Hall of Famer was Andre the Giant in 1993. The second class they had has 7 people were in it. Two of the people were people of color, Bulba Brazil, you know, and would be in any Hall of Fame. And then the other person was James Dudley. Now, James Dudley was not a wrestler. He was a promoter, or he helped out James McMahon, or Vince Sr., helped him out in the D.C. area with promoting shows. Now, I remember when he was first brought into the – and, again, you know, this, again, the second class at Arnold Skoll and Bobo, Nature Boy Buddy Rogers, Chief J, Strongbow, Classy Freddie Blassie, and Gorilla Monsoon. So you take those wrestlers, and there were no doubt, you know, hey, yeah, these are all would consider to be Hall of Famers. Maybe Chief J and Strongbow, you can probably argue a little bit, but you say James Dudley, okay, well, he was not known by unless, like, you know, only a certain amount of people, and he was a black person. Why is he, you know, going to this WWE Hall of, or I guess WWF Hall of Fame back then? So there was discussion way back then in 94 about, okay, what's going on with this, and how can they have this guy who's basically a nobody? He only worked in Washington, D.C., and he just helped out Vincent J. McMahon. Why is he in the Hall of Fame? So that discussion started really way back then about African-Americans going into the WWE Hall of Fame. So on that note, I'll let you both of you talk about some other things to get some other people on. Have a real good weekend. It's good to talk to both of you. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Oh, always a pleasure, Brian. Thank you very much for calling in. And that's interesting. It's the thing. You know, we could talk about women. We could talk about women of color. We could talk about men of color. We can talk about anyone that isn't in the purview of Vincent Kennedy McMahon as far as, like, quote-unquote normal. Because in our conversation – one of the things that always sticks out to me is when Sheamus had his face turned and every promo had to start with him and his grandfather in Ireland and this old folk tale, because he couldn't just be a dude. He had to be the Irish guy who always has a tale to tell. And that just got old. And it's because Vince can't see anything outside of an American ethnocentric lens. So even a guy like Cesaro, who is beloved in the independent scene and ardent fans just think he's the bee's knees, he can't get over the fact that this guy's Swiss. It's like, I don't know how you reach someone at age 70. We're seeing this in politics. How do you have a 70-year-old in control of things that has no desire to change? And then we're constantly making excuses for him. Like, gone are the era. Like, in 2018, let's get over the whole, he came up in a, or she came up in a different era as an excuse. Mm-hmm. Because right. I can tell you, my kid's going to have all these technological advances we do at my age, like at 36. He has it at age 5. So by the time I get to wherever I'm going to be, I can't be a 55-year-old complaining about the latest technology. You have to adapt or die. And I think with pro wrestling, we seem to just say it's just wrestling and write it off. And like Brian said, there shouldn't be 57 questions on a questionnaire to explain why a black guy got into the Hall of Fame that was arbitrarily picked by a guy. It shouldn't be the same thing for Ivory. It shouldn't be that for Beth Phoenix. It shouldn't be that for Manami Toyota. And that's actually a question after our final call. Before our final call, I want to ask you, Kylan from New Jersey had asked before you came on, what are your thoughts on Manami Toyota eventually coming into the WWE Hall of Fame? Do you think it's possible? And do you think there will be the same backlash?
I don't know if they would even consider Manami Toyota, because from as long as I've been following Japanese women's wrestling and the things I've read, I don't think they ever considered bringing her into the company as a performer, which is shocking to think.
Yeah.
You know, this is the same company that brought in Noam Nakano, and at that time she was in her prime over in Japan and was one of the biggest things. They also had brought in Aja Kong, and we all know her for the instance, you know, back this thing of Chaparita Ascari, who was also a great performer in Mexico and Japan. So to see that they never brought that Aja Kong, and of course Vincent Gann was terrified when she dismantled that woman on Monday Night Raw, never had seen her work beforehand to even know what she was capable of doing. They also had brought in Kyoko Inoue and a couple others, you know, for one-off appearances and stuff like that. But Manami Toya, I don't think they ever considered bringing her in. And to see them bring her and put her in the Hall of Fame, I think that would be a good deal. I mean, they've done it with plenty others, you know, over the past couple of years. It's never worked. They've never had any contact with the company, and they brought them in and threw them in the Hall of Fame. I think as great as a performer she has been and the long career she has had, she should get that acknowledgement. And it shouldn't have to be because of, you know, Oscar's on television right now. It should just be that we should want everybody that's involved in this business in our Hall of Fame, period, because we're one of the many in this business. So, I don't know. I would be shocked to see that happening.
No, yeah, I mean, it's like you said, I think the only reason they would is if Asuka takes over like Fire, and that would lead to them kind of glomming on, just like they did with GLOW. They didn't want anything mm-hmm. to do with GLOW when it was a questionable TV show, just like with Batista. You know, I think about this all the time. WWE is, at its nature, they like in this entertainment side of that, the E, they want it to be the moment things are popular. They never want to be right before it gets popular or right after.
Right.
It's always right in the moment. So it took the perfect storm of Ronda Rousey, people suddenly realizing that the Williams sisters seem to win everything in tennis. The women's national team smoking the men's in soccer and being world champions and going on a tour where they smoke teams from around the world in front of American audiences, for them to finally say, hey, yeah, our women are – equal to the men. Funny how that happens, you know. And so mm-hmm. I could see them saying, you know, Asuka, Kairi Sane, all these other women that they're bringing in, Kavita Devi, as more of a Asian in terms of not Asian in terms of the traditional form, but you know what I mean. Or bringing in folks from India, Pakistan, that is going to drive them to making those decisions, not necessarily the quality content of the character that the person brought prior to that in their career, which to me is disgusting, because Asuka was awesome before she got to the United States. Manami Toyota was awesome without having been in the United States regularly. And, you know, I'm sure that's a deep dive for another day.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get to our last caller for the day. 219. Bring us home. State your name, where you're calling from, and welcome to the deep dive.
Hi, thanks. I'm Harvey from Chicago, and I'm one of the people that got into it with Bruce on Twitter. So I just wanted to, like, lay out my viewpoint. My big issue
oh, yeah,
with the
absolutely.
Pancakes thing.
Sure. So
yeah,
before you get started, Harvey, I'm going to mute myself, and this is going to be the Bechdel test for pro wrestling. I'm going to let you ladies carry this home, and I'm going to shut up.
Thanks. My big issue isn't, like, the article or that Bruce wrote it, but it's really the removal of agency and options from black wrestlers. And the quickest way I can put this, really, is that black wrestlers aren't allowed to smile or dance or sing or do anything without it being compared to a minstrel. And that just mm-hmm. bothers me so much. Like, if you think about Rusev Day right now, no one's complaining about that. But if the New Day were doing it, it'd be a minstrel show. Bayley going out there and hugging people and throwing her arms up, and there's the wacky flailing arm guys. No one has a problem with that. But if the New Day did it, it'd be a minstrel show. And it bothers me so much. And I'm not defending SmackDown, because I call it Jingoism Live because it is the worst show right now. But I have an issue with the New Day always being called a minstrel show and people going, oh, they're educated. They should know better. They're educated. Right. They do know better. They know what they're doing. Like, I want to give the wrestlers some kind of credit and some kind of space to do what they want. And you brought it up earlier, like with Sasha Banks, everyone calling her Ratchet because of what she wears. I mean, her husband is making her clothing. She knows she's not, you know, wearing skimpy outfits to show off for people. She just mm-hmm. wants to wear that. Like, let the women and let the minorities, let them have space to do things. Let them smile like John Cena can rap, but R-Truth can't rap. Why? And that's my big issue.
Right. I totally agree with you about, you know, they do just a little slightest, you know, hint of comedy that they're compared to a minstrel show. And I think it's also people's education on it and knowing the history of certain things. And if they do, when they see certain things like that, especially on a show like, you know, professional wrestling, where everything is just written and, you know, it's gone off script, they automatically jump to that because they're like, oh my God, am I watching this? I'm in disbelief. And, you know, I said it earlier, I would like to think that the New Day and Sasha Banks and Alicia Fox and plenty of others of color have came across things that's been shown to them as creative, like, hey, you're going to do this tonight, and they're just like, no. I want to think they have that control. I know that when it comes to the ring gear, a lot of them are involved in the ring gear, which I'm glad to say, because I don't want everybody looking the freaking same or wearing the same ugly singlet like it's 1982. But at the same time, when you see certain things like that, people are ready to jump to those things and say it's a minstrel show, it's a mockery, this and that, and it's because of what we've been taught. There's a lot of people that's been taught, if you see black people used in a mocking way, that it's wrong. You shouldn't like it. It shouldn't be like this. And it's nothing wrong with that. because you're being told and being made aware of what's wrong with this. You know it's wrong. You should be okay with it. But that's like the sticky thing with the New Day thing. It's like, should we all be mad about it, or should we be okay with it that they're not making them into such a stereotype, but it's more so they're involved in likeness. And I think that's kind of like where Bruce is, you know, at, like, you know, should I be okay with this? Should I like this? And I think a lot of people took it as that he was speaking out of turn for Black people, like, we're all saying this. And it's not like that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm totally, like, with the line of this is questionable. Like, I think everything on SmackDown, there's a little what's happening here, because it went from, I think, personally, one of the best shows to, you know, rah-rah America, please chant for the flag. But so now, I mean, that there is that lens, but I also think that to give athletes and the New Day, I mean, Black, even removing the athlete, just give, you know, Black people and women space to be themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the Usos and go, oh, they're doing this to, you know, a stereotype of, you know, what, you know, urban youth are, you know, what they appear to be. No, they're just 20-somethings from the Bay Area. That's how they dress, though. That's how they speak. They're mm-hmm. themselves. And I think that's why they're one of the best things on SmackDown, is because they are themselves. It's not, you know, a racist gimmick. So I think we should look at all these things individually. And maybe the New Day are just goofy people and they think this is funny. And we could say it's not funny, but we don't have to say that they're performing for white people.
Right. I when it comes to the Usos, you know, I remember a couple of years ago, everybody was saying, oh, they're making them about, you know, being Samoan and stuff. And it's just like, well, if they're proud to be Samoan, let them be proud, but don't make that what's all the be-all to them as performers. And, you know, when it comes to what Naomi, I remember there was this big debate online with Naomi and people thinking that, you know, her dancing and, you know, especially what she does, you know, her finisher, everybody thinks that that's, you know, degrading the Black women and stuff like that. And that was a huge debate all over Twitter. Yeah. And for me, I felt like it wasn't degrading. She's proud of her body. She's using her body, which is her weapon, to be defensive against anybody on Twitter. She's using it against that. So for me, it didn't come off like that. It came off as like, she's a proud Black woman. She's proud of her body. She's proud of everything she's done. And her confidence shows that. Like, if you were following Naomi and you didn't realize she was Black, you wouldn't think that's the first thing that pops up in your mind. Oh, she's not a Black girl. You would say, no, that's Naomi. She wants you to feel the glow. She's incredible in the ring. And that's all to it. It shouldn't have to be the first thing that comes to your mind. Oh, this is a beautiful Black woman. Shouldn't have to do that. But there comes these cases in wrestling where you've had that in the past, like, you know, Jacqueline. For years, they would make those weird comments about on commentary, and I'd just be like, well, why can't she just be this strong Black woman that beat up Sable and took her weed? Why can't she be the one that beat her for the belt? Like, we have to take everything away from Black's backhanded compliments, because we're taught that that's okay to do. When it's a white performer, it's never that. We're supposed to accept that they're great and accept that they're able to do this and that. Like Ric Flair, we're supposed to accept that he's a multi-time champion, but we can't bring up anything bad he's done. But with Black wrestlers, it's, you know, Booker T is this multi-time champion, but, oh, let's bring up some bad things he did. It's never, you know, just one and done situation. It has to be this and that and all these other things. You break down the person's character. And I hate that. And in 2018, you shouldn't have to do that with any performer anymore, period.
Absolutely. Where's Rich?
Wow. I'm back. Okay, I got allowed to – once y'all tag me in. Now, I'm going to be quick because I do want – I want to thank you, one, for calling in, and I hope you contribute, call in, write, keep tweeting, because I think it's good to hear the other side. And I think, much like a lot of these arguments – My concern with the New Day isn't the menstrual show writ large. I think it's more or less, because I mention this to Bruce all the time. I think Big E he mentioned this on Twitter. I want to say it was a smooth 2 years ago when they were first kind of taking off. He grew up in a big, like, Christian home, and he's like, a lot of the stuff you see me doing the grinding is because I was in a sexually repressive home, and this is me wilding out and kind of rebelling against that as an adult. And I think what they do is largely what they want to do. But I think where Bruce was coming from, and I don't want to speak for him too much, so I'll speak for myself. Where I'm coming from with concern with the New Day is, just like it's concern when I see Asuka, concern when I see, you know, when I hear stories of JR saying the only reason they hired Gail Kim is because Vince had to be convinced that there's Asian porn out there and guys like Asians. Like, my concern is the guy at the top. And how, despite the New Day doing these things, being super intelligent, bringing up the time, like one of my favorite skits they did with the time travel, when, you know, Kofi was like, "Man, I ain't never get a shot after that match with Randy." And it's these fourth wall breaks that's kind of like Deadpool, but applied to three really smart black dudes. I think while they're doing these things and they're being themselves, it's also possible, given the history, that the writer, producer and owner of the company they work for are also getting off on some racist undertones. They feel like they snuck past the goalie, even if the New Day have taken that out of the equation in their own heads.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really it for me.
I definitely agree. I feel like there's some inside jokes and some old, you know, things from the past being thrown out there by the writers. I don't put it past anybody, especially in wrestling when it comes to writing. Some of the things some of us have seen over the past 20 years on television, we're just like, how did that make air? You know, regardless of just people of color or women in general, this, you know, being a women's wrestling fan, I've seen some things where I've just been like, am I supposed to be okay with this as a female watching this? But there's been times where I felt like I shouldn't have watched it because, you know, it wasn't comfortable as a woman watching it. Like, now it's, you know, here we're women, we hear us war and everything. It's great to see. It's a different, complete turn from 20 years ago when I was, you know, conditioned to accept bra and panties matches and think that this was a thing that should be appropriate all the time. So there's been some changes, but there's still those underlining issues that need to be fixed completely in order for everybody to feel comfortable watching it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not lost on me that Sasha Banks got to create her character in NXT in an environment where she was encouraged to embrace herself and not a vision of the people above her. Same thing with Bayley, like you said. And one thing I would say, too, is I and this will be a deep dive for another day, I'm sure, because I'm running out of time. And I do want to thank both of you. And I want to give you both time for your Twitters because I think both of you have awesome voices. I find it curious that a lot of wrestlers have their dual ethnicity sublimated whenever they find something for them. Like, we don't talk about Bayley being Latina or Latinx. We don't talk about the same thing for Seth Rollins. We don't talk about that with anytime there's a person that you just call quote unquote normal in WWE world, they have that kind of like cauterized. And I think that's not cool either.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, So in the interest of not having, because I hear the Jeopardy music, so I know that means my wife's down there watching and tapping her foot. So why don't you ladies, thank you so much. Drop your Twitter handles where they can find you. And I want to thank you for finishing up the deep dive with this strong conversation.
Oh, thank you. I'm Vice Machine on Twitter. That's V-I-C-E. So like drugs, not an actual machine.
Okay, you guys can find me on Twitter at CIARA92189, and thank you for having me on. This was a very great conversation, and not one that just needs to be a one-and-done situation. It needs to be continued on and on throughout all podcasts. Great.
Oh, yeah, I'm loving it. I thank you both for your time, Ciara. Come back anytime you want. Uh-oh, I got 60 seconds. I'm getting yelled at by Blog Talk. And please call back, definitely. Follow me on Twitter at Rich_Fan, at Vice Machine, at CR. I'm going to screw this up, so I'm going to make sure I get it right before this thing cuts me off. At CR92189. These ladies were awesome. You guys were awesome. I really enjoyed this deep dive. I hope you guys did as well. I challenge you this week, dive into something new, dive into a conversation that's uncomfortable, because when we get into the uncomfortable parts of the water, that is when we find our strength. Go see Black Panther. It is awesome. I envision a day where the New Day can be a Pan-African trio that can dance, do what they want, don't get judged for it negatively, and have writers that reflect the values that they teach. Writers that look like they look. Thank you guys for listening. Next week, I have Bray on, She's So Offbeat, and we're going to keep this rolling. God bless and take care. And when we come back, I'm going to chat with you with some more stuff next week. In the interim, we're out of time.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Killer Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Weight Killer Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.